Harry, you might remember this, when the Pope came to Perth. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
What year was that, about 80-something or 90? It's a while ago now. Anyway, there was a papal visit to Perth, and it was during the period of time when I was a photographer at the West Australian. And, of course, every photographer available got thrown to every angle of his visit to cover whatever might happen. And one of my colleagues, who, for the purpose of this, I'll just call him John, he was sent to one of the locations where the Pope was visiting, which is interesting because had the editor of the West Australian made the request to the photographic chief of staff, I want the most hard-bitten, hardcore, angry atheist possible to go out and cover this event, they chose him. They chose this fella. Angry. Oh, very angry atheist. Yeah. And he came back from being there and I just happened to be in the crew room. He said, it was great. The Pope Mobile or whatever it was turned up and all of the dignitaries were lined up ready to be received or to receive or do whatever you do, bow. And the Pope made a beeline for the photographers, of which he was one. He didn't go to the VIPs, who were standing there sort of having polished up their shoes and nervously waiting for their moment. And he came over to my mate and shook his hand. Oh, man, it started getting emotional thinking. And he was saying, I'm not religious, but you know what, that bloke, he's got something. He's got something. It's good. Yeah, and now we're thinking about Jesus going up to Jerusalem through Jericho. In the book of Luke, we have the story of Zacchaeus I've spoken about before. The thing I love about this story is the name of Zacchaeus, which wouldn't be lost on a Hebrew audience because the name Zacchaeus means innocent and pure. Jesus knew his name and called him by his name. He called him innocent and pure. And the other thing I love about this story is Jesus didn't say, oh, Zacchaeus, you're all right. You can come and join me. No, he didn't say that. He said to Zacchaeus, I want to come to your place, which is such a significant difference for me. This isn't some sort of toleration. This is, I want to come to your place. Can you imagine the silence in the crowd? I reckon if I had been in that crowd, I would have been ready for Jesus to be on my side, backing me against the person that I popularly disavow and disapprove and call the enemy. They are ready for Jesus to take on their judgment of this man, but their enemy became the favoured one in this story. I think they might have forgotten something, as I think I do, as we all do. Because if they had taken notice of the prophets that they listened to, from the scrolls that is, in the synagogue, they'd have known that God seeks communion with all, not just a select few. Think about all those quotes that we've heard about God seeks to build a nation to the nations and the Gentiles, everybody. And yet, for the good people of Jericho, it became more important to appear right than to identify with the shared humanity of those with whom they disagreed. Became more important to feel like they were on the right side than to identify with the shared humanity of the one they called the enemy. And I think that carries on. Because with God, everyone is included. God is not, believe it or not, about excluding people. God was not the tool to be used by people to create hierarchies. Hierarchies which restricted access to the elite. A friend of mine a work colleague who attended a very, very well-known Sydney evangelical church told me about how once security came to him during a service and told him he was sitting in the VIP seating and could he please move? God is not about creating a club for the well-connected few. I'm gonna push a button here and you can have a go at me later. Because I've written, will I reference private schools with religious names which serve as gatekeepers for the social elite? It's provocative. God is about connecting everybody. If life is about developing one's personal salvation program, then it's not a life that's inspired by God. It's about communion, or it's not of God. I might have mentioned once before, I was photographing a karate black belt guy once for a feature about Japan, and I just wanted a close-up of his belt. And he was holding it like that, and I said, "Ah, mate, you're about due for a new one, because this black belt had faded to grey." And he said, "No, no, you're missing the point. This black belt one day will return to white, and I'll be indistinguishable from white belts." It's not about learning to hit people. It's actually something much bigger than that. God is not the way we become part of the select few or the means by which we get to exclude people we don't like. So what do we do with that? What do we do when the Bible's been brandished and God has been appropriated by so many who sought to claim God as their own rather than surrender to the idea that we are God's own, all of us? Look at colonisation everywhere. Missionaries funded by multinational resource companies in South America in my lifetime used to clear the forest so that industry can go in. I think about my childhood in Kalgoorlie where the kids that came from the missions are stolen from their families. And the church was used to enact that process, used to subdue people. What's this got to do with Palm Sunday? Well, first of all, Jesus gets on a donkey. There's lots of stuff about the symbolism of the donkey that I'm sure you've had at lots of different Palm Sunday services. I just like the idea that the donkey was like the utility vehicle of the place. It was like the donkey was the ute. It was just used for everything. I mean, it's no surprise that therefore Mary was on a donkey, that, what is it, Isaac, Jeepus, I'm just trying to remember, all the references to where donkeys were used to bear human burdens in the Bible. I like the humility. It was a workaday animal. It wasn't grand. It was the beast of burden of the everyday. And then, of course, there's the symbolism of it being the colt that hadn't been ridden before, and Jesus enacting peace in such a way with such an animal that would have been skittish. Anyway, there's lots of potent imagery, and I'm not a theologian, so I don't know enough to talk about it, which is probably a good thing. But I like the fact it was untamed. Maybe that's something else you can talk about when you're having a cuppa. Jesus gets up to Jerusalem, which is the epicenter of his religion. It's where the temple is. It's the man-made house of God, complete with the Holy of Holies, where, you know, the priest had to have the rope tied with a bell on the end so that they could drag him out, you know, if he died in the presence of God and all that sort of stuff. It's sort of, if you like, for me, excuse it if it doesn't sound good, but it's the ultimate form of humans putting God in a box. A place where the unworthy could be excluded, which is kind of crazy because those who are excluded were the very people that Jesus made a beeline for. Bit like my Pope story. That seems to make Jesus a bit angry. They've got this great system there, currency exchange, so people coming in from elsewhere would have to exchange whatever unit of currency they had for temple currency in order to buy doves and other things they slaughter in order to make sacrifices. And of course, a good handy profit was made. It was a good system. When Jesus came and the people were exchanging currency at those tables, he wasn't catching them out. It's not like something they were doing sheepishly or hiding. It was good practice. It was a fantastic example of good cooperation between business and religion. We chalk that up, we could probably make a government policy about that. And I'm being deliberately facetious, but he wasn't catching them out. So when he turned their tables over, it must have been incredibly shocking. What's he doing? This is a great system. Who is this man? I'm sure they were actually proud of what they were doing there. And who was this nothing who arrives on a donkey and starts ranting at them, talking about them turning the house of prayer into a den of robbers. So, again, thinking tipped upside down. With the temple excluding people from worshipping God, the very people that God made flesh in Jesus tells us over and over are the people in whom we will connect with God. Jesus tells us that power, prestige aren't what it's about. He tells us not to invest in the things that rust away, the things of this earth. Yeah. And it's not very different today, where institutions, which were apparently inspired by God and are run as organisations. What are the whitewashed tombs of our society? Jesus challenged the teachers of the law and the Pharisees. He said, "You whitewashed tombs, you're all nice on the outside, but inside you're full of decay." I wonder what our whitewashed tombs are. I wonder, where have we been turned upside down by Christ? Or where are we being challenged to change our thinking? I'd just like to finish with a brief benediction, and then it's cup of tea time, and I invite you to, with me, just have an honest conversation with someone about anything. It could be something that's been tickled up. But I'll leave you with this blessing by Rachel Held Evans. Blessed are the agnostics. Blessed are they who doubt. Blessed are those who have nothing to offer. Blessed are the preschoolers who cut in line at communion. Blessed are the poor in spirit. You are of heaven and Jesus blesses you. Blessed are those who no one else notices, the kids who sit alone at middle school lunch tables, the laundry guys at the hospital, the sex workers and the night shift street sweepers, the closeted, the teens who have to figure out ways to hide the new cuts on their arms. Blessed are the meek. You are of heaven, and Jesus blesses you. Blessed are they who have loved enough to know what loss feels like. Blessed are the mothers of the miscarried. Blessed are they who can't fall apart because they have to keep it together for everybody else. Blessed are those who still aren't over it yet. Blessed are those who mourn. You are of heaven. Jesus blesses you.